year, March 2009, dealing with the results of the global economic recession. This year is all about building on the recovery that is underway in New Zealand. As background of this budget, it's clear that the evidence for the need to rebalance and redirect this economy is overwhelming. When our export sector has been in recession for 5 years, too much of our recent growth has been based on excessive consumption, fast growth of government spending, and significant borrowing by New Zealand, both government and households and businesses to make up the difference. To the extent that our net external liabilities, that is what we owe from foreign lenders, was about 90 billion in 2000, stands at 170 billion today, and is forecast to rise to about 250 billion of total debt to foreign lenders by 2014. As a result of those imbalances, we have had since 2008 a sluggish growth in this economy. Since 2005, we've had sluggish growth in this economy. In the 3 years up to the beginning of the global recession, growth in the New Zealand economy averaged less than 1%, and in fact, per capita GDP growth was negative. About half of our trading partner growth, and about a third of growth in Australia and neighbourhood. The government faces similar challenges. The government's books were already going to deficit at the 2008 budget. The global recession certainly exacerbated that problem. So how will the budget 2010 achieve change in the economy? We have a number of objectives. We want to focus on higher and sustainable growth. That, as we've said many times over recent months, to tilt the economy towards increasing its earning capacity, that is, towards savings and exports and investment and new jobs. This budget includes a major tax reform package featuring across the board tax cuts that will help families get ahead because of the lower tax rates and lower marginal tax rates, and keep more skilled Kiwis in New Zealand. A particularly important objective given the pickup in the Australian economy. The budget also outlines an improved fiscal outlook over the next 4 or 5 years. Both Crown debt and government deficits are better forecast in 2009. However, it is our aim to continue with disciplines which will allow us to get back to budget surplus as fast as possible. And finally, the budget outlines the priorities for public spending, both the 1.1 billion of the new spending allocation and the 1.8 billion over 4 years, which has been redirected from less effective programs and low priorities to our high priority on frontline services in health and education. But also outlines as part of progress in our public spending the continued investment in substantial infrastructure projects in research, science and technology, roads, rail and ultra-fast broadband. All of these are focused on our overriding objective, which is to lift the performance of this economy as we move through this recovery. I now want to look at the budget forecasts. These are the forecasts, redlined forecasts from the 2009 budget, which show clearly show a path to recovery. These are new forecasts. The particular feature of these forecasts are that in the 2010-11 year, We're expecting a 3.2% growth rather than the 1.8% that was forecast in the last budget. So we're looking at a faster exit from a recession, a stronger recovery with the stronger growth in employment and incomes that goes with that. In fact, these forecasts include forecasts of 170,000 new jobs over the next 4 years, and the early signs of that are the turnaround in the unemployment figures. And just as importantly, a lift in average real household incomes of around $7,000 over the forecast period. So more jobs and higher incomes occurring sooner. Now we move on to the effect of this on the budget deficits. The yellow line is the track that we looked at in early 2009, that is the government deficits before the policy decisions of the 2009 budget. The red line shows the effect of the 2009 budget decisions, where the focus was to get some control over deficits that were potentially spinning out of control. That showed that we would reach a surplus at around 2019. The forecast for this budget are the white line. This shows us with a lower peak in the deficit at around 4% of GDP and returning to surplus 3 years sooner in 2016. I would point out that the deficit for 2010-11 is larger that was forecast in the December update. 4.2% in this budget compared to 3.4% of GDP forecast back in December. There's a number of factors behind this. One is the cost of timing differences in the tax package, which has a cost of about 460, a one-off cost of $460 million in its first year. And some one-off expenses which would have been incurred in the current financial year. Treatments which will be incurred next year, next financial year, as outlined on this budget. The medium-term track, however, is unambiguously better, and we are going to continue to work hard to get back to surplus sooner than forecast here. The better deficits flow through into the better outlook for debt. The yellow line is the beginning line that we looked at in about March 2009, which showed ever-rising debt with no peak at any stage. The decisions in budget 2009 were designed to bend that curve down. If we hadn't taken decisions of the type that we did, we could have found ourselves among those countries who this year have become a strong focus of sovereign debt markets. The forecast for this budget has government debt now peaking earlier and lower. It will now peak at 27% of GDP in 2014-15 and falling to 14% of GDP by the end of the projection period. Our aim with the surge in public debt is to get it under control and of course get it down, so that New Zealand has the capacity to absorb any further economic shocks in the same way that it has been able to in 2008. And when we look at the volatility and uncertainty, particularly global debt markets, it's quite possible that sometime in the next 10 years we could be subject to a significant economic shock. So these improvements reduce our vulnerability to these volatile sovereign debt markets. However, we are still vulnerable, particularly when we look at New Zealand's total external debt, and we must keep working to reduce that vulnerability to foreign lenders. Now I want to move on to the principal spending decisions that have been made, just outline these in a general sense here with much more detail on the immediate past. $2.1 billion for over 4 years, $512 million this year. $1.4 billion for schools, their child education over 4 years. This will include a 4% increase increase in store operations grants or a larger increase in the recent years. A good example of moving funding from the back office bureaucracy into the frontline services. I just want to remind you of child education. As we pointed out in recent months, this has trebled from 400 million to 1.2 billion per year. Without any policy change, it would have required a further 200 million increase this year. We've made some policy decisions that would constrain the increase in early childhood to 107 million extra. So early childhood would still be receiving proportionately the largest increase of any education service by quite a significant margin, not quite as large an increase as was predicted. The Prime Minister has already announced the science and innovation spending. We have reprioritised 1.8 billion of spending within the public sector. That's complementing the public sector and my ministerial colleagues. Over the last 2 years, they've come up with just short of $4 billion of reprioritised spending within the whole public budget. That is moving services from less effective programs, back office spending, to our higher priority frontline services. And of course, there's been a significant announcement of further significant infrastructure spending, in particular the commitment of capital to rail, and I might also add the extra $1 billion package over 5 years to deal with the elements and unanticipated and significant expenditure. I now want to move on to the tax reform. It's vital that we see this tax reform as one of the principal methods by which we can rebalance this economy. There are not many levers you can pull in an economy that affect everyone's decisions, which is one reason why a lot of people, including tax drivers around here, seem keen to know what's in the budget, because it affects everybody. Our objectives are to reduce the tax package to reward effort and help families get ahead, to attract and retain skilled people in New Zealand, to encourage savings and productive investment, and to make the tax system fairer. Here are the main changes in the tax system. Across the board, rate cuts from 1 October. The new rates are 10.5% down from 12% for the bottom threshold, $14,000, $14,000, $17.5% down from 21%, from $48,000 to $70,000, 30% down from 33%, and over $70,000, a reduction in the top tax rate from 38% to 33%. These changes will occur on the 1st of October, along with an increase in the rate of GST from 12.5% to 15%. There will be immediate offsetting increases in welfare benefits, New Zealand Super, student allowances, and most working families' tax credits. The size of that adjustment is just over 2%, as estimated by Statistics New Zealand. From 2 o'clock today, any New Zealander can go to the website www.taxguide.govt.nz to calculate the impact on them of these changes. We've also made a number of changes to company tax, including a reduction in the company tax rate from the 2011-12 tax year, that is the next tax year for companies, from 30% to 28%. Alongside that, we're reducing the tax rate for most savings vehicles to 28%, so that there is a neutrality among savings vehicles. We're removing, as part of our policy of broad-based, low-rate tax system, removing 20% appreciation loading on new plant and equipment for assets purchased after today. by international standards, we have fairly high appreciation rates, higher than the true economic rate of appreciation. In addition, again, because the information tells us that buildings generally do not appreciate, there will be no reductions allowed for appreciation on buildings with an estimated useful life of 50 years or more. In both cases, these changes bring depreciation rates closer to economic reality, broaden our tax base, and allow us to have lower tax rates. Tax rules change also for the 2011-2012 year to reduce the interest deductions that foreign multinationals can take by having high levels of debt allocated to the New Zealand subsidiaries. So this will happen by reducing the thin capitalisation threshold from 75% to 60%. This brings our treatment of the foreign owners of New Zealand businesses and assets pretty much mainstream international thresholds for protecting their own tax base. We're also going to be tightening the rules around loss contributing qualifying companies and qualifying company rules, which will yield a reasonably significant amount of revenue. The tax working group and the government have talked about closing tax loopholes to ensure that everyone pays the statutory tax rate and that people can't manipulate the circumstances in order to qualify for social assistance, which doesn't reflect their real economic position. From today, we will add back investment losses and calculate real families' entitlements, and we'll be issuing a discussion document about further tightening the rules on the definition of income for working families and student allowances, with a view to implementing further changes by the 1st of April 2011. Changes in tax rates have eliminated the advantage enjoyed by trusts. There's been very significant growth in the use of trusts. We believe that trusts have a role, but they should not be driven by tax considerations. These changes, including the preventing GST feeding scheme, which is probably related, and improved IRB enforcement, will ensure that those people who earn wages and salaries do not pay higher rates of tax than people are able to structure their business affairs for tax purposes. IRB have built up a clear track record in recent years where for every dollar of extra compliance effort that they make, they yield about $5 of revenue. And a significant amount of this has come from the property sector. We decided to invest more in that compliance because we believe it will continue to yield around $5 for every $1 of effort. So the package will give the main revenue resources to crack down on any more evasion and avoidance. We believe this does make the tax system fairer. There are two aspects of the tax change that we believe are important. First of all, two-thirds of the cost of the income tax cuts goes to reducing the bottom two rates. Two-thirds of the cost of the income tax cuts goes to reducing the bottom two rates. That is, the rates that apply to people earning under $48,000. These tax changes will sharpen incentives across the whole economy. This is often overlooked. 73% of income earners in New Zealand will now have a top statutory tax rate of 17.5% or less. So almost three quarters of New Zealand earners will face a top tax rate of 17.5% or less. That means for an extra hour of overtime, they only pay 17.5 cents on the dollar. For an extra dollar, they would have a KiwiSaver, They are taxed only at 17.5 cents per dollar. The government has been interested in reshaping the incentives across the whole economy, not just one or two groups of income earners. For those who are around the top of the $48,000 area, their marginal tax rate has in the last 2 years almost halved. If you're on $48,000 going out working hour overtime, just 2 years ago you were paying 33 cents a dollar. For the 1st of October you will pay 17.5 cents a dollar out of the extra overtime. There are any number of ways that you can measure the equity of these tax changes, and this is an attempt to capture the impact of all these measures across three equally sized full-time, equally sized household earning groups. And what it shows is that all groups get roughly somewhere between 0.5% to 1% increase in their net incomes. So the impact of this tax package, taking into account all aspects of the tax package, not just the personal tax and GST effect, means that there's a roughly similar impact proportionally across all the income groups. It happens in low to middle income areas, particularly those with children, have been the biggest proportion of winners from tax changes over the past decade or so, including the tax changes announced today. There's a graph there which will show you what we can find. I'll just move on to the impact on health. This graph shows us the benefits to low and middle income earners of tax packages actually going back to 1996. What it shows up on the left hand axis is the proportionate reduction in tax paid. So someone on $30,000 has had about a 48% reduction in the tax that they pay since we started making significant changes to the tax scale back in 1996 to 1998, which was the last large-scale tax changes. These figures exclude working for families. So if you add in working for families, those percentages are much higher. Much higher. In fact, after these changes, a household with two children pays no net tax until they earn over $50,000. Up to $50,000, they are receiving family tax credits and in-work tax credits. At $50,000, the inflows meet the outflows, so they pay net zero tax for a family of two at $50,000. And it's only when they earn over $50,000 that they start paying tax, net tax, to the government. We believe that is an impressive achievement for families and for New Zealand. And actually, this graph shows that the tax system has become proportionally more progressive as a result of changes over the last 10 to 15 years. I'll just now move to some scenarios. You have a number of these in your media pack, and I won't go through them in detail. Just got three here. One is an average household, and this is by household, not by individual. The tax code of about $46 a week, every extra GST of 21, better off by about $25 per week. A retired couple. Super millions will be better off by about $11 per week. As we pointed out a couple of months ago, the married rate of national superannuation has since the middle of 2008 moved by about $100 a fortnight. And that is the combined effect of the CPI adjustments and affect superannuation in a number of different ways. With respect to property investors, the mum and dad property investor do suffer from a bit more taxation with respect to property investment, but are still a bit better off. If they have two, three, four or more houses, then they would be worse off. So there's a range of New Zealanders here. A very wide range of New Zealanders are going to be better off as a result of the income and GST switch and the significant place ordinary measures. So just on to recap what we set out to achieve and what we have achieved in this budget. We wanted to rebalance the tax system for growth. And this system, these changes unambiguously encourage more incentive for work, more into savings and investment, and less encouragement into property and debt. We provide at the same time tax cuts across the board, with the open intention of keeping all skilled Kiwis in New Zealand, but also helping all households get ahead. And 73% of all earners face a marginal tax rate of 17.5%. That is lower by any standard you can think of. The budget also keeps deficits and debt under control and continues with the government's consistent and considered management of its significant fiscal problems, at the same time as channeling more money into our highest priorities. We have also been able, even in these difficult circumstances, to continue with the kind of investment that builds the platform for the future, and that is further investment in science and tourism, expanding our resources sector, and very significant investment in infrastructure, which is building up to provide a very large number of jobs, which is important for growth, but more importantly, setting a platform for, we would hope, faster increases in growth in the future. So overall, the budget sets a credible path for growth and builds on the recovery that New Zealanders both need and deserve. I'll now take questions. Because the nothing we would have certainly been simple as people, a lot of people in those higher income levels are not paying the top tax rate, particularly the wealthiest individuals. And we decided we wanted to eliminate the kind of opportunity for restructuring which undermines the integrity of the system. And we believe that by having a more straightforward system where those opportunities don't exist, everyone can see it's there, and everyone is more likely to pay their fair share of tax. That's the first point. And the second one is the government's been quite straight up about the need for us to have a competitive environment for the sector people. People who are earning over $70,000 are still paying 33 cents a dollar, almost twice the tax rate that someone earning under $48,000 is paying, and but we need to be competitive. So one of the effects of this package is that where in the past Australians paid less tax than New Zealanders up to about $250,000 gross income, now they pay less than New Zealanders up to $50,000 of income.
Persuade Fitch to remove his negative output?
looking over the side there, it would be, the Queen of Mania agencies are having a pretty good look at solid risk these days, and certainly it's our view that this part is small enough for any credit agency to remove a negative watch and give it to the other countries they are looking at. And over the next few days, we'll have the opportunity to break some pretty thoroughly on that.
Minister, can you tell us what you think these property tax changes will do to property prices and to rents?
We have taken a reasonably fair and balanced approach to the property changes. And we've done that because property still represents the largest single investment for New Zealanders, and we have avoided making very abrupt changes which would be seen as unfair. Where that's happened in the past, those schemes have been unwound under political pressure. What I think will most likely happen is two things. One is the announcement of these measures removes at least the government generated uncertainty in the property market, and that will help people make their decisions. Treasury's estimates about the impact on rents, putting mild that it could increase rents up to about 1.5% over 3 or 4 years. But we will have yet to see how the property market reacts.
To what extent has changed in debt trap a consequence of policy change in 2010 as opposed to the economic forecast changes?
Well, we are sticking to the budget allowance that we announced last year. So in that sense, policy changes haven't had an impact on. They are mainly changes in the forecast.
Well,
yes, with respect to, first point is consistent with the last budget. Despite our large deficits, we have kept all income support in place. There's been no reductions in benefits, there's been significant increases in national super as a result of 2 rounds of tax cuts. We've been working with families in place with some minor adjustments. Free block businesses are all still in place. And the early childhood subsidies are largely still in place. We've yet to see where the disease follows. Parents of the child centres have done very well in the last 4 or 5 years because they've had 3 times as much revenue coming into the system through basically the same number of kids and staff. 3 times much revenue for government. So they may, we yet to see whether they'll pass on any changes in the system. Well, what I'm saying is we'll get to see. And when you've got a sector that's had a trembling and government revenue, it's quite likely that they've got a bit of free will.
Given that you've already got the second lowest rate of tax on the average earner, did you feel it was really necessary to lower that rate even further so it might actually bottom the OECD in terms of tax on the average earner to make a contribution?
Look, our OECD ranking was not our top priority. Our top priority is getting this economy growing as we come out of this recession and lifting our growth rates to meet the kind of ambitions that the government has set for the New Zealand economy. So we decided we wanted to improve those incentives across the board. If we worried about the OECD ranking, we probably would only cut tax rates at the top. But we don't believe that it's just incentives for higher earners that matter. We believe the incentives matter right across the income range. Because New Zealand's not even ahead, and that's what's critical about our approach to the economy. It's less about carving up the pie, whose slice of cake is bigger than mine, and much more about growing the cake, much more about people feeling like they can be mobile up the income range. And when 73% of earners face a marginal tax rate of 17.5%. I think that is a pretty profound symbol about the type of country we want to be. And that is where if you get out and get on with your job and save your money, then you get to keep most of it and you get to make your own choices, even if you're on a low income.
More because they're going to get a better return from it.
less tax on their savings. More people are going to increase their hours when they can, because if you do another hour of work, you get to keep 82 and a half cents, which is not a bad return on an hour's work.
You said that the burden of paying for these tax cuts is being borne by property investors and foreign investors. How big is that burden, and what do you think the relative splits are between property investors paying for it and foreign investors paying for it?
Well, that was all laid out in the numbers, but roughly, but the depreciation measures are somewhere around 700 million, about half of what tax we can bring this time. And the thin capitalisation is around 100 million. We really have to check those numbers now. They're 200, just over 200 for thin capitalisation.
So based on your early answer, if the economy was in good shape, boom, would you not have introduced this tax review?
Well, we never quite anticipated that putting people this way in a booming economy. The economic imbalance is so deep seated that even if we had seen, for instance, the housing market take off on us before Christmas, and people for some irrational reason decide that they can't spend that, which are things that would give you a short-term growth, we would have been wanting to push against them. So I guess the answer is, even if the economy was booming for any reason other than growth in exports, we'd be wanting to bring in this sort of package. We don't want to underestimate the extent to which, in the latter half of the last decade, the economy has got out of balance. The export sector has been shrinking, the trade sector has shrunk by 10%, non-tradable sector, driven to large sector by economy speculation and government spending, grew by 15%. So we have to, even after getting the spending capacity of the economy pretty quickly, all those overseas liabilities to foreign lenders and increasingly growing foreign lenders would make us pretty vulnerable. The government's commitment to the Maori Party is strong and enduring.
Do you see this as part of a series of tax changes over a number of years? Could you be in power that long? Or is this, as you said, a one-off period? Is this a one-off?
The question of do we see this as part of a series of tax changes? I don't think we will see further changes in the balance of direct and indirect taxation on the scale. This is something like over 4 years, I think, a $15 billion package. However, I think there may be scope within the broader strategy of the way we tax savings and other forms of investment. We further progress could be made, but there would need to be a lot of open discussion about that of the sort that we've already had over this issue of direct and indirect taxation. But I'd say this is likely to be the biggest change people on low incomes are at least as well as they were, and we've made sure that even within a recession, we have protected those who are most vulnerable and most dependent, both in the last budget and this budget. But what they really need is an economy that's going to generate 170,000 new jobs over the next 3 or 4 years. In fact, they need one that's going to generate 250,000 new jobs. So these tax changes are focused on lifting out economic growth rates, and that will get people on, the people that only is concerned about, and we're concerned about, the better sense of opportunity than they have had. Certainly over the last couple of years, their opportunities have been shrinking rapidly. We must turn that around.
When Labor raised the top rate to 39, one of the main criticisms was the break between land and company rate. And lower than the top rate, we've also known the company rate is still really keeping it. Quite a differential. I mean, is that a problem?
Well, we spent quite a question on whether the differential between the remaining differential between the company and the top personal rate is still a problem. And then there's brought up the rest of the problem. We've gone into that in some detail, and the official advice has been that that gap of 5% between the company and the personal rate is narrow enough that we don't need to bother with the comparison of further measures to plug the gap. The other advice has been that the single biggest driver of tax avoidance has been the gap between the personal and the trust rate, and we've shut that right down. The measure of that is the data IRD produced for the tax revenue group, which showed a very substantial increase in trusts since the 39% rate came in. There's been a lot to show that the 39% rate has driven up the value of property losses considerably. It's a big factor in driving the housing boom. That was a false sense of wealth. It drove up the tax avoidance quite considerably, as illustrated by the increase in trusts and other structures designed to avoid it.
So what did actually prompt the company tax rate to drop the company tax rate to 28% by 2011?
We were prompted by a couple of things. One is once we could see the ability to do it. The second thing is that we want to get a jump on anyone else as one of the few developed countries that is able to put together this kind of tax package, which shows both to our internal and external investment community that we are open for business and ready to go and compete with everyone else in great shape.
Are you concerned by, I guess, what some business groups are talking about, that banks have not been lending? This is a way to help them invest more?
Yeah, the question is whether we're concerned about what businesses are saying about banks not being willing to lend. Look, I think the drop in the company tax rate will help lift confidence across the business sector. The other changes we make in business taxation, though, that's not always favourable. Losing some of the appreciation side and bringing some up on the lower rate across the broader base. With respect to banks lending money, they are responding to some of the rules that have been made by the Reserve Bank. Credit is going to be tighter, as probably should, but it's too loose. So it is important that companies are able to generate more of their own cash because they're going to need more equity before they do go on to the bank to borrow the rest.
Just a comment about the company tax rate in Australia. Australia is going to drop theirs to 3 times the competitive wage against Australia on the corporate rate.
Look, we can hear what's due, and we have done that. I would say, at the very least, we want to make sure that they don't get too far ahead of us. It's a problem for the design of our tax system. The company rates tend to be dropping across the board, across the OECD, and certainly across the Asia Pacific area. You know, 30% rate has been near the top end. But that's something we'll keep in mind.
Do you think there's ever a good case to increase the thresholds for the personal income tax rates?
Question on whether we think there's ever a good case to increase the thresholds. Well, there's always an argument to do that, particularly. If you allow over time the own chance to creep up, go along with the change to the shop. We just decided to keep this change straightforward and focus on the incentives to get ahead and improve those across the board rather than chilling out a lot of money and shipping the shops.
That's what we need to think of. Nice to the interesting. Do you consider the function index at all, or would you look to change?
Question of whether we consider inflation index and thresholds. The answer is we haven't. It's not a question to whether we want the future. I wouldn't necessarily rule that out, but I would consider this one. One thing that has changed since the half-year update is has been the shift up in our product costs, so terms of trade and improved costs across the range of our export products, whether it's dairy, or olives, or meat, or fish. Manufacturing has picked up on it because it may be driven by the favourable exchange rate of Australia, which is a diverse market. So the good news about the growth forecast is that it's driven by the kind of pickup we would want, which is in our export performance, rather than the general public deciding to go on spending and enjoy ours. So the early signs of sustainable growth are promising, and that is why the tax package is so timely, because it's pushing in the direction the economy is starting to move. Yeah, the question was that forecasts for the years 2 and 3 have been dropped marginally. Again, this is one of the forecasts about the detail of that, but partly it's to do with just getting to back to our wide forecast of where we're always tending back towards the longer run capacity of the economy. So we get there sooner, they tend to flatten off a bit more. Delay, it's like a 1% shift down in year 3. Okay. That's good. Thank you very much.